I'm reading today from the New International Version. Psalm 131, a song of ascent from David. My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me. But I have calmed and quieted myself. I'm like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and evermore. And from the New Testament, Book of Matthew, chapter 14, verses 12 to 33, when Jesus walks on the water. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side of the lake while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, Jesus went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "Oh, it's a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," Jesus said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, crying out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "Oh, ye of little faith, Peter, why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Here ends the reading.
Holy and amazing God, for the Spirit that is in this place and the Spirit that has brought us to this moment and this time, the Spirit that has brought us here for a particular reason, this particular moment, this particular place, let your Spirit open up our hearts and our minds and our souls that we may together discern your will for us at this time. We also ask, O God, that you would guide the words of my mouth and meditations of all of our hearts so they're acceptable to you. We pray all this in the name of Christ, and all God's people say,
Amen. Amen.
So let me first say, this is a really awkward day. Right? Because we're here to worship. We're here to kind of gather and pray and sing and hear the word. But you also are here because you're going to be asked to elect and agree upon your next pastor. If you vote yes, it's great. All plans are going well. So there's this, like, this weird kind of thing that we do as Presbyterians, is we gather together to affirm this movement of the Spirit through the church. You have called your session to serve, and they have then called a mission study, and then they have called a pastor nominating committee, and the presbytery has approved. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go on today. So the reality of today is just an odd day. It would be easy to make this a day that's all about me. And believe me, I have an ego enough that if you want to do that, that's fine. But I learned early on that that's not always the best thing for us to do. I tell one quick story when I meet people for the first time or communities, and that when I went to seminary way back in the early 90s, I went to seminary because everybody was telling me, go to seminary. Like, that's what you should do. You know, as a young person of color who exhibited a little leadership and went to things, we often tell those folks in our denomination, you clearly should be going to seminary, even if we maybe shouldn't or not at that time. And I began to believe that over and over again because I would hear that. And then I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go to seminary. So I went. So I kind of went into seminary, not with this, God has called me to this awesome responsibility, but like, people are telling me I should go do this. It must be pretty good, so I'm going to go. So I went to classes. I kind of humored people. I thought I was a good preacher at that point. seminary student early on. And I know there are some folks here that get to preach and speak and do all that kind of thing. But you know there are some times we're standing in that pulpit and we're in the middle of a sermon and all we're thinking about is, man, I'm good. So all that goes to tell you is, yes, I enjoy this. It is a special day for you as a congregation, for me as a pastor, for my family, for us as a community. And so there is something unique and special about what we're doing in these moments, but it is greater than us. Right? It is greater than me as a person. It is greater than Dave and Susan who have been sharing the search. It's greater than your session. It's greater than even this church. But as we gather for worship, it's about where does God prompt and poke us into the world. And so as we enter this time, as you all are trying your best not to assess everything I do, as you're trying to not just think about let's get to the congregational vote and get the party on, let's be in this space because the world needs us to. The world needs us to be in where we are experiencing a lot of things in the world. And every morning I get up and, not every morning, most mornings I get up and I immediately look on my phone like I'm not supposed to. And you see all the bad stuff that's going on in the world. Right? I don't know if you're keeping up with news. Right? Lots of stuff going on, right? I mean, if we just think about this, right, we have the environmental degradation that's going on. We have the shooting that just happened in New Zealand. We'll be doing the Lord's Prayer for New Zealand today. We know that in the world, as we look around incarceration and criminal justice, there's issues. We look at racism that runs rampant through both sports and in politics. We know that poverty and hunger are an issue. We know all these things, right? Misogyny continues. This is one of my favorite images because I think both everybody we naturally go to disagreement, and we go oftentimes to shaming and misogyny and picking on spouses and those kinds of things. We know ableism exists throughout the world. We know around genderism and what that looks like. You know, this is exhausting, right? There's illegal immigration stuff that people are out there around, xenophobia and all those kinds of things. It would be easier if we just took the posture of not listening. We could, right? We could, in many ways, lean into those spaces where we don't have to worry. And there are times where we need to retreat into that, but for the most part, privilege allows us to not really worry about those kinds of things if we don't feel like they directly impact us. And our challenge is to not do that, is to not just see these as othering kinds of places, passionate as we might be, but how do we actually move through these and thrive through them so they don't overwhelm us? So it doesn't become this cacophony of things that are going on that just make us God is moving through us, and God challenges us to trust God as we decide how we go about living out our faith in the world. As your pastor, as I hopefully move into this role, I do want to kind of give you a glimpse into how I think we do that as a community of faith. The passage that I chose today is one of my favorite passages. It is a passage that reminds me of the rhythms and the seasons of our passion and our faith, the walking on the water, and this, the story that we've heard many times. But I want to think about that, unpack it a little bit. The first is, one of the things that I think we need to do together is we need to breathe together. I've already received emails from people, and again, all good intentions, of here's all the stuff we should do. So I'm like, the 17th hasn't happened yet. Let's get through that. And even then, like my email for the church will be active pretty soon, but it's going to have a responder to that says, I begin on the 1st of April. I will be in touch with you soon after that. Because I think we have this urgency, which I think is driven by huge passions, right? We see these things happen, and we want to move, we want to act. And that, I will take that over stagnation and calcification any day. Because it's easier to say, hey, let's breathe together, than to say, come on, let's go. I was taught this early on. This image that I'm using now is a picture of the chess group on Market Street in San Francisco. If any of you fancy yourself good chess players, go ahead and go down there if you want. Don't bring your money. So these are folks who will play, and you know, if you're good, you might do okay, but most of the time these are folks that generally are living in SROs or may not have housing or on the streets, but these are folks whose minds are amazing around chess. And the church I was pastoring was down in that area, and every Monday, David would come knocking on the church door. And at that point in ministry, I still have some of this, but at that point it was all about, let's get things done. I have a list of things to do. I have to do them. Monday is the day that everybody should be tired of church right now, so I can do church without people. But David was relentless. Knocked on my door all the time. Pastor, would you like to play chess? No, David, I don't have time. You know, I've got things to do. Thank you. Pastor, would you like to play chess? No, I don't have time. Monday after Monday. And then finally, there really wasn't out of any great gesture of faithfulness and openness. I was like, if I finally play chess with him, maybe he'll go away. So I say, David, sure, let's go play some chess. Let's get this over with, let's play chess. So David, I invite David into the sanctuary at that point, and right in the front area we have this table. David kind of throws out one of those vinyl mats that you've seen the chess games, and the pieces are there, they don't all match, and they're kind of ugly and dirty and all that. He rolls them out, sets up the pieces, and he says, Pastor, you may go. I fancy myself a decent chess player for no reason. He goes, a terrible thing. So I'm like, okay, I'll go. Like, you know, 3 moves in, I'm like, whoa. I guess I'm done. He says to me, there are 2 things he says to me here. He says to me, Pastor, yes, David, would you like to play again? And at that point, I go, oh, yeah, we're playing again. Right? So I'm like, clear my calendar. We play again. No, and again, like 3 or 4 moves. I'm like, oh, no. And then he says to me, after like 3 times, I think he's just really sorry for me. He says to me, Pastor, would you like me to come and give you lessons? And at that point, the ego breaks down. And I'm like, yes. Right? There's this submission. And so for about 6 weeks, 2 months, David showed up every Monday, and we had this lesson. And David would look at me, and I'd put a hand on a piece, and he'd shake his head. Then I'd put another hand on, you know. And then he would just, but it was that moment where for me, I was reminded that in order to be healthy and thriving and to actually do work that was sustainable and not just about the here and now and not succumb to the urgency, that I needed to stop and breathe. To stop and engage with one another. To stop and engage my own self. And to just be. Now, you can't stay there forever. You got to move at some point. But for me, it was that moment of like, I'm just going to be. model and push us to sit and breathe together, so that we can do work that is sustainable and meaningful and thoughtful, urgent, but deliberate. The other thing that I think that what I love about this passage is that Jesus, you know, so this just happens right after the feeding of the 5,000. So if you imagine all this stuff, good stuff that happens, and then if it were me, if it was us, if we just had this great, amazing event, right? Let's say everything goes really well today, we have this great party. Tomorrow, the last thing like you want to do is not do anything about that. Right? Tomorrow, we're going to be like, let's go. Let's just, oh, here we go. But Jesus, right after they feed and do this amazing thing, says, good job, get on the boat, I'm going to go pray. And then sends them on their way, and he goes. And there's this two parts about this passage I really love. The part that, the first part is that Jesus puts them in a boat together, a bunch of people who had just done this amazing thing with no direction and just says, go. And then you have Peter. Peter is my favorite disciple because Peter, you remember Monday Thursday Peter, right? What does Peter do on Monday Thursday when Jesus wants to wash his feet? Peter says, wash all of me, right? Peter is all in, all I love Peter. The people around me that are just like, I'm all in. I'm like, yes, go, right? So when Peter is in that boat with them, you can imagine the other disciples going, oh, Peter. Right? So when this image comes towards their boat, walking on the water, they're all scared, which they should be, right? If you all see, next time you're out on a boat, and you see somebody walking on the water, you're not just going to be like, oh, that's just Jesus, and you hate not eating lunch, right? You're going to be like, whoa, that's not supposed to be happening. And you're not going to recognize Jesus, because we often don't recognize Jesus until Jesus says, it's me. And so once Jesus gets closer, it's no surprise that when Jesus is made real, Peter's first reaction is not, oh, that's really amazing, wonderful. And Peter's first reaction is like, well, if you can do it, then why can't I? And you're right, all the other disciples are probably like, oh my God, Peter, turn it down. You are not Jesus. But Peter's not thinking. I'm just like, this is amazing. And so, what does Jesus do? I'm always moved by the leadership that Jesus portrays in this moment. When somebody comes up to Jesus and says, you're doing something really amazing, invite me to do that too. I know that there are times when I probably would say, whoa, 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 I'm Jesus, you're Peter, right? Jesus is probably thinking, if he had human ego that way, would be saying, I do Jesus things. I walk on the water, I raise people from the dead, I change water to wine. You do human things. Your job is to not understand that stuff at the beginning. That's your job. Your job isn't to do the exact same thing that I do, but yet Peter, in this moment, says, or Jesus to Peter in that moment says, come on. I mean, this is an amazing moment where Jesus invites Peter into an act of miracle. And then Peter has the audacity to hear that, right? And say, this is a really long way back here. To say, right? So Jesus says, come on. And then Peter, without even thinking about it, says, okay. Right? And then steps out of the boat onto the water. And then again, next time you're on a boat, don't do this for real. But think about what that would be like, right? If you are stepping out onto a boat, like, what is that about? And so what I'm saying is that there are times when actually Jesus is going to allow us to be like that. But yet, that group of people was probably looking upon Peter and being like, what are you doing? Because oftentimes when we gather together, we don't actually appreciate the passions that we bring. I want to tell you, as people I've been talking to and getting doing my own research about First Presbyterian, I asked this group and they're over, what do you think is the image of First Presbyterian Church out there? You can repeat if you're there this morning.
Social justice.
Liberal.
Old and white.
Ornery. Old and white. I'm going to repeat that one. That was Your picture will go. And each one had this little plaque that said how long they were there. So I thought it was cute. I'm like, so Lucille, what are the dates going to be on my plaque? And she says, we'll see. Like, but Lucille came to my office one Monday. And Lucille is one of those people that always wore a hat outside. She was always a person that would dress up no matter what was going on. She always dressed up. Monday after church, she would dress up. And so she comes into the office. She comes walking in to the courtyard. You can hear everything whistling in the wind. At least that's how I remember it. Knocks on the door. And says, is Bruce there? So I hear this from my office, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm in trouble. No pastor, no reverend, nothing. Lucille always used honorifics. And Inga, my office administrator at that time, office administrators, their primary job is to protect the pastor. And so Lucille comes, knocks on the door. Inga opens the door. She says, is Bruce here? And Inga says to Lucille, he's in his office. I'm like, she says, I'm more scared of Lucille than of you. I'm like, all right. So Lucille comes sauntering down the long hallway. You can hear her clicking. Again, I'm not that it's about age, but at that point I was 25, 26 years old, and a coward. So I kick the door closed. Possibly she'd forget where the office was. That didn't happen. Knocks on the door. Bruce, are you in there? Yes, it's on you. Come on in. So I am a brave soul. So I decide to get behind my big old desk. Because that's what you do. Let me get behind this big piece of furniture. So you know, lady, you come into this space. It's my room. Don't be coming in here getting all up in me and saying stuff. But so I'm literally standing behind this big wooden desk. Lucille's standing across from me, and she says, Bruce, do you have any idea what happened this past Sunday? I'm like, no, I have no idea what happened this past Sunday, Lucille. You have no idea what happened on Sunday? Lucille, I have no idea what happened on Sunday. Now, there have been times where I've done things on Sunday. I think I swore within the first month from the pulpit, which is generally not a good thing. Don't worry, I don't do that anymore. I think one time I walked in with a coffee cup, and I didn't do it on purpose, but I walked over, and the first flat thing that I found to put my coffee cup on was the piano.
Oh.
So I did this, and they did that. And so I did this, and then I went like this to see if I get it again. They didn't think that was very cute. So again, there's always things. It's not like I didn't do all the things. But this time I really couldn't remember it, so she would keep asking me, do you know what happened? As if changing the emphasis on each syllable would change my memory. And finally she says to me, Bruce, the flowers were in the wrong place. So, again, context of where I was in ministry. I look at Lucille and I say to her, Lucille, I don't care. It's a pretty good reaction there. Because you all know, right? It's not good. Right? So I say it. And then I immediately know, it's like, what have I done, right? What has happened where I have now created this space where it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube and you're trying to put it back in, right? Lucille was going, she was so angry. She was like, just this, like, you could just feel the steam coming off her, and then we just went out. Now, Lucille and I became co-conspirators by the end of my time. But at that moment, we could not get beyond what we thought was right or wrong or the way that we should lead the church. Lucille had been at this church for 50 years at that point. Lucille, who had always been faithful, had gone from every Sunday morning, she would get those flowers and she would bring them to the retirement home, and then she would call the next person who was supposed to bring flowers. She would make sure those at the office, and then on Sunday morning before any of the staff, she would be there and she'd put those flowers in the center of that sanctuary. There was a warm ring in the carpet that went the same place every time, and she would go back to the back of the sanctuary, make sure that they were centered, and then she would just go back and she would sit back down, fourth row on the right. And she experienced faith, the divine, her community, through the lens of those flowers. time, and they're yearning for it, and we don't want to hear it, and we say, you know what, we don't care. When in reality, we have this great opportunity to be together and to do things in this space and in this community that will enliven this community and our larger community. The rituals that we can offer to the world, the ways in which we engage our faith to combat some of those things that I mentioned very early on, that is a gift that we have to continue to try to nurture with each other if we can allow each other to do it in the ways that we all find passionate to do it, just like Peter. Hopefully we're not going to be the disciples of the bat letting one person go off and do anything. But yet when some person finds that moment, when one person finds that moment that reminds us that we can be like Christ, that we can step onto the water, then we're going to say, go. Now, this is all intellectual, but I want to leave you three real quick examples. Because we have done these things. We have done those things, these moments where we have risked together and we've stepped out into faith. So this isn't just an ethereal kind of experience, an aspirational one. This is about what do we actually accomplish today as a world. Last summer, your General Assembly in the Presbyterian Church USA raised over $40,000 to go towards ending cash bail in Missouri. Right? The number of people that engaged and found out and learned about the cash bail system in so many places, we as a people of faith, this is amazing. Those of us on that march were thinking, would this have been the denomination we're part of 10 years ago? And not a person said, yeah, sure. Everybody said, no way. But for this moment, there was water walking, my friends. We also know that our denomination and many denominations are still struggling with what it means to be LGBTQIA+. What does that look like? And when I was moderator of our denomination, we weren't even ordaining folks. And now look at us. Ordaining, redefining marriage, understanding what that looks like. These two folks, you are connected to the More Life Presbyterians. Amanda's been on the board. I'm currently on the board. Alex, transgender, who's our executive director. Jess, who is non-binary, was just approved for ordination. These are water-walking moments. And I don't want us to gloss over the fact that the decisions we made today have huge ramifications for our church. I don't know, and Ann and I were talking about this, I don't know if there is another church that is predominantly white where your pastoral staff will be welcome. Now that is not to say, good job us. It's kind of a warning that our perspectives are different and we love you and we'll move with you and all that. There is some water walking going on in just this act. It's not all that defines us and you, but as I was thinking about today, I was like, man, who would have thought? So, that Peter moment, if you're that disciple on the back, going, Peter, what are you doing? Know that there are moments where that water walking happens. And that if we can gather together in ways that are faithful, thoughtful, and we breathe and we do it together, that you and I can walk our water over and over and over again. Because we do trust that God is in the midst of it all. Holy and gracious God, for your Spirit that is in this place, the Spirit that continues to move, the Spirit that surrounds us from our first breath in the day till the day we lay our heads down at night. There are struggles.